I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 82 of Season 6 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Caprash journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Leandra Lynn of the Rocky Horror Minute. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Happy to return yet again.
Yes, yes. Keep doing that time warp and come back. Let's do the time warp again, right? Isn't that how it goes?
Again and again.
There you go. I got to say, I saw Rocky Horror in the theater once in, must have been 1992. And I actually walked out in the middle. It's one of the only two movies in my life that I've walked out of. It was that, and I think the other one was Young Einstein. I need to revisit one of these days. It is on my list of something to rewatch. I don't know.
Was there a shadow cast there, or was it just that you were sitting in a movie?
No. There was a shadow cast.
A lot of people just aren't a huge fan of that experience, and I completely understand it.
Yeah. I mean, again, it was, I remember I was in high school at the time, and I went with a group of friends, and we all just said, okay, this isn't for us, and we just got up and left. I can't tell you how much of the movie I saw at the time or anything like that. I might have seen it once since then, but I don't remember it that well. I remember certain things. You know, I do remember the song Time Warp, and, you know, based on what we discussed yesterday, I remember the actors that are in the movie, but I probably should give it a chance. You know what? I will give it a chance. I will make that a priority for me. So by the time that everyone listens to this, the odds are I've already watched it and I've already reviewed it. So, do the time warp back a month or two, and you'll probably be able to see that I've seen the movie once again. I can't guarantee I'm gonna love it as much as you, but we'll have to wait and see.
I'm just not sure that it's wise to love the Rocky Horror Picture Show as much as I do, if I'm being perfectly honest.
Well, for someone like me who has reviewed nearly 11,000 movies on my website. What's another one?
That's fair.
I've seen some terrible movies, and I've seen some amazing movies. And the amazing ones I watch over and over, and the terrible ones I usually try to not watch again. And sometimes I will go to revisit just to make sure that my original opinion was correct. And sometimes I'm wrong. It does happen.
I'd bumped into Barry Boswick backstage at a show that he hosted for my Rocky cast, and I had told him that I particularly enjoyed him in this really bad movie, Helen Keller versus Night Wolves. And he said, if you really like movies where I'm bad in it, you should watch Project Metal Beast. It was the low point of my career. And I saw it, and I really can't disagree with him, but it was so fun to hear that directly from him that that's the one.
Well, you know, at least he believes that too. So that's good. It's not as if you're going against the grain. You know, absolutely. So basically he was telling you that he did it for the paycheck.
He would never say that, but yes, absolutely.
Okay, that's fine. There are a lot of actors that have said that. I mean, there's the famous quote from Michael Caine, you know, which most people know about from Jaws 3, or Jaws 4. Sorry, Jaws 4. Have you ever heard his quote from that?
I don't think so, actually.
So basically, someone, he was in Jaws of Revenge, and it is known to be one of the worst movies ever to have come out, especially from Jaws. And he claims that it was known as a paycheck movie. So when he was asked about the movie in an interview, what he thought about the movie, he said, "Well, I've never seen it, but by all accounts, it's terrible. However, I have seen the house that it built, and it's terrific."
Oh, that's amazing.
So, it goes to show that you just sometimes need that paycheck to build that new house without caring about anything else. So we got to give him a little credit for that, I guess.
For sure.
What can they do? Minute 82 begins with Potter closing the door while giving orders to his servant or manservant, whatever you want to call him, and ends with Violet trying to thank George. End of things yesterday with Potter noticing what's going on with Billy, noticing that he has this new envelope, which, again, we talked about last week, that there's absolutely no way that there's $8,000 in that envelope, especially since you can see some of the bills are fives. So, yeah, I don't know. They didn't do a good job of making us believe that that's really what's there. But who cares? We're supposed to just, pretend to believe, I guess you could say.
I think that if they thought that people would be scrutinizing this film minute by minute, somebody would have gone, maybe we should be a little bit clearer with how much money is in there. But alas, how could they have known?
No, nobody knew 77 years ago that someone would be as crazy as we are to sit and go through this movie. And I think that goes. I think you can say that across the board for every movies by minute movie, that
Exactly.
anyone who's made them had no idea that there were going to be crazy people like the hundreds of us out there who do these type of movie podcasts, that we're gonna scrutinize their movies this much. So yeah, and I remember I once had a conversation with somebody, and we said, wouldn't it be really cool if one day directors started realizing that this is what was going to happen, and decided that what they would do is they would keep that in mind when they're making the movie. They say, "Oh, it's for because of all those those pesky movies by minute people. We're gonna do something different here." So, who knows? We will have to wait and see how that works out in the future. I guess that's all we
Can't
can
wait.
do. But we might not ever even know. It's not as if they're going to announce it. They're going to say, "Oh, we made this movie, and we dare anyone, doing a movies by minute podcast to challenge us on stuff." That actually would be cool, because many of us would then take up that gauntlet and say, "Okay, we'll show you what it means." Put your money where your mouth is, that type of thing. Right. So you can see that as this minute begins, he's got this really smug look on his face.
Absolutely. He has the face of somebody who says actions have consequences and just completely has no sympathy for Billy and by extension George, because we spoke yesterday about how I think that George probably knew that Billy wasn't a great choice for this specific assignment, but for whatever reason kept giving him the responsibility of putting the money in the bank. And yet this happens, and Potter just I feel like if we were being honest, George Bailey and Potter probably have a similar opinion of actions having consequences, and this is an unfortunate consequence of the action of having Billy in charge of the deposit.
Right. That's true. Because I mean, basically George eventually, even post what happens in this movie, he probably will never let Billy take the money ever again.
Oh, absolutely not.
That's it. You're done. I'll give you something else to do. Twiddle your thumbs, play with all your animals. I don't know. Something. Just you're not gonna be taking the money anymore. And I mean, we can also learn so much about Potter's personality, even though we know a lot about it already, just by the way that he talks to, his, again, I don't even know what to refer to him as, his manservant,
I guess a boon.
his goon. Okay, that's fine too. Where he just says, "Take me back." He's not even polite about it. It's like, okay, you can take me back now, or something like that. It's take me back. And but I guess the guy is also be he's got the Michael Caine look for the whole thing. He's gonna be building a nice house with the money that Potter pays him, so he doesn't really care how he's being dealt with.
Exactly. I don't think that there's anybody who works for Potter who does it out of love or respect for the man.
No, not at all. Not at all. Well, I'm
Just
sure
love or
you know what,
respect for his money.
there might be aspiring Potters out there. People who
Oh,
want
that's fair.
to, be like Potter. So maybe they do like that. I wouldn't put it past the fact that there are evil people out there that are trying to learn from the best.
I can definitely see that. I hadn't really considered that there'd be people that would go, I want to be like that man.
Oh, there definitely has to be. Otherwise there would be no evil in the world because, they got to learn it from somewhere. It would be nice if there was no evil in the world.
Bedford Falls, but I guess we find out later what happens when just one person is taken out of the equation. What sort of world there it becomes,
That is correct.
and how many people really do seem to kind of lean into the Potter side of their personality.
That is correct. And I love the way that when Potter's being wheeled back to his to his desk, he like puts his hand over his mouth. And if he had a beard, it looks like he would be stroking his beard.
It's very much the cat who ate the canary
Yes.
at this point. It's just like, I have a fun little secret for myself.
That's right. That's right. And so, that they just these few seconds, I mean, we're talking, was it 7 seconds of the movie? It just tells us so much about Potter. You don't even have to watch the rest of the movie to know how evil Potter is just from these 7 seconds of just seeing him, acting so devilishly evil by the way that he's doing.
And how many other actors out there can do all of that in 7 seconds? And how many other directors can really put that to film?
That's right. I mean, again, I'm still amazed, and I've said this numerous times, that Lena Barrymore wasn't even nominated for an Oscar for this.
It really is shocking.
He might
But we'll
not have
talk a little
won.
bit
He
more
might not
about
have
that.
won against Homer Parrish, but still,
He deserved the nod.
yes, that's the thing. I mean, Harold Russell did an amazing job in The Best Years of Our Lives, so. And nobody even expected him to win, which is why Russell is the only actor to win two Oscars for playing the same role. But have you ever seen Best Years of Our Lives?
I haven't.
Oh, okay. So you should see it. I highly recommend
I
it.
will.
There is a group Movies by Minute project that was done 3 years ago about it.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. So.
So I'll watch it and then I'll listen
There.
to the movie by minute.
Yes, Jim O'Kane produced it. He did a great job with it.
Oh, nice.
The shot changes, and we're outside again, and we get to see Uncle Billy running around outside, running through the snow, clearly confused, trying to figure out what's going on. He runs by a very interesting looking. Maybe wooden sleigh with reindeers. I don't even know what you would refer to it. It's like a decoration in the middle of the middle of the road there.
Yeah, the town is getting ready for Christmas. That's for sure.
Well, they're getting ready for Harry Bailey
That is true.
and
It's
Christmas
two
at the
things.
same time, both Christmas and Harry Bailey at the same time. And then George, we see him walking around in the building alone. He turns back in towards his office and says, "Just make yourself at home, Mr. Carter. I'll get those books for you here." Just to remind people, we have Mr. Carter, the bank examiner, that for some reason decided on Christmas Eve or the day before Christmas to go and check out what's going on in the Bailey Savings and Loan, or Billy and Loan, that so George was helping him as much as possible, and now he's leaving to go get something. Get some of the books, whatever it is. And then he walks out and he bumps into our good friend Violet. And George just looks up and goes, Hey, hello, Vi. And she says, George, can I see you for a second? Why, of course you can. Go on into the office there. He does it in a very nonchalant we're basically seeing that George is not flustered by the fact that he now has the bank examiner here.
Of course,
You
he has
know,
nothing to hide.
that's right. He doesn't know there's anything wrong, nothing else. And then Uncle Billy comes in and makes a lot of noise as he's walking into the office. And George turns to him and says, Uncle Billy, talk to Harry. He's on the telephone. And then Tilly calls him over and goes, hurry up, Uncle Billy, hurry. Long distance, Washington. And then Eustace says, hey, here's Harry on the phone. Your nephew, remember? Harry. Here he is. Hurry up. Hello, hello. Yes, Harry, yes. Everything's fine. And then he hangs up the phone. He doesn't even pay any attention to the fact that everyone else is still waiting to talk on the phone and stuff like that. So they mentioned long distance calling. Okay, what do you know about how long distance calling works?
I haven't really thought about it in the but and other than you used to call collect and it would cost money, but otherwise my guess is that this would have been back when they had like actual telephone operators that probably need to patch into other operators. I don't know how much it would entail, but certainly more than it does now.
Right. Well, now anywhere you call, you can be calling someone down the block from you, and it would be considered what was then considered a long distance call because it's in a different area code. The whole idea was is when you were calling to within your area code, that was a local call, and calling outside of your area code is a long distance call. And nowadays that because of cell phones and because of the large number of of numbers that are needed. So, they changed the whole system about how that really worked.
I mean, thank goodness that they did because I've had the same number for, I guess, 20 years, and I've moved many times in that, and it'd be wild to think that people that I know now would have to spend additional money to talk with me on the phone.
Yeah, I mean nowadays people don't even think about about how much phone calls cost. It was something that back. I mean, I've told this story before, but when I was growing up, I grew up in Detroit, and I had a good friend from school that lived in Windsor, which is in Ontario, right across the border. And I would call him at night, and we would talk. And at one point, my parents got really upset at me because they said I'm making international phone calls. And I'm talking to a friend for over an hour every night or whatever, someone I see in school all day. So they got a little upset that the about how much we had to pay for that for those calls because even though the distance wise it wasn't that far, but because of I guess invisible lines, he lived in a different country, so therefore it was considered an international call, which is not something that nowadays people really need to deal with.
And I'm sure that that at least at the beginning, it was that there were a lot of things that they had to consider with making those calls, and they had to draw a line at some place.
Right, of course, of course. And but you're right about the fact that basically most of these calls up until like the 1960s, in order to get to a non-local number, you needed to go through an operator. But as we said, nowadays it's not really something anyone really needs to deal with. It's a little bit different.
Thankfully.
Makes things easier. That there's no question about that. We once again still see how flustered Uncle Billy is about everything that's going on. As far as he's concerned, he wants to, just take care of everything. Now, did you notice that as he walked in, he lifts his arm and Jimmy the Crow flies onto his arm?
I did. My note is, Potter decides no actions have consequences and I'm rich now, while Billy is one with nature with this crow. That was kind of my synopsis of this minute so that I could refresh my memory.
Right. Okay. That's fair. I mean, I've read in certain places that every time the crow appears, something bad is happening.
Oh, that's a really cool idea.
So this is another example of that, obviously. You know,
I love that.
And, you know, he's talking on the phone, and as he's talking on the phone, so we have, you know, Tilly also listening in, and she gets a little confused after he hangs up the phone because she's listening in on the conversation, and, you know, I guess the line just goes dead because of the way that she's listening in there and stuff like that. And then basically Uncle Billy starts bumbling to himself and goes, I ought to have my head examined. $8,000, it's got to be somewhere. And then he goes into his office, you know, and closes the door. And, you know, it's nice to see that George he's always open to help everyone out. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, even if someone can conceivably think that something is not going on properly with Violet, he doesn't look at it that way. As far as he's concerned, you know, if he's doing things properly, then that's fine.
And it's back to what I said earlier. George has nothing to hide.
Right.
So he will behave around Violet like she is an old friend and not like she is the town floozy. Because while that might be what other people think, that's not what George has in mind.
That's right. Exactly. And then George says, here you are. And he hands her an envelope and she goes, character. If I had any character, I'd... And then George interrupts her and says, it takes a lot of character to leave your hometown and start all over again. No, George, don't. So, I mean, again, this is, you know, they're giving us a lot of insight into these characters. You know, we had no clue that Violet wants to leave, you know, just because, you know, we're not privy to her conversation with George explaining why she needs money or what she's doing. You know, but based on the fact that George has agreed to give her money, and then he says to her, it takes a lot of character to just pick up and leave and start all over somewhere else. You know, it makes you wonder what's going on that she feels that she needs to leave. You know, is there some sort of scandal in Bedford Falls and that's why she wants to leave? Or is it that she feels that she can't get anywhere in Bedford Falls because, you know, people have a wrong impression of her. So she wants to start anew somewhere else.
Well, is it a wrong impression, though? The reason I ask is I don't recall offhand if they ever addressed what Violet does for a living.
No.
And she's always dressed to the nines. She's got the furs. She's got just the most exquisite taste in fashion. So where is she getting that money?
Well, I mean, the one thing we did see is that when she met George, this must have been in about 40 episodes ago or whatever, when George, you know, offers to go with her, where they'll go barefoot and walk up to Mount Bedford and all that stuff. You know, she's out on the town there, and she has these two guys that are following her and that are willing to wait for her and things like that. The question is, you know, is she a kept woman, or is it just I don't know. It's they give us the impression that, you know, that everyone likes Violet. Let's put it that way.
Yes.
So people are kind to her, and in some ways, I guess maybe they're giving her free things. But what's interesting is he's giving her the money.
Exactly.
You'd think that she already would have money if what you've been alluding to is correct, then she would have money. Or, I mean, I doubt that she would spend all her money just on her clothes. She would still need to save some money on her own.
And I think that when you said, is she a kept woman? It could be that she is somebody's mistress who the person who is bankrolling her gives her all the finest things, but not necessarily an
Right.
allowance.
Okay. That's
So
possible too.
that's certainly a possibility, but who knows?
Right. We'll never know because it's not something that goes into detail. I mean, we do know that later on Potter will say to George, that people are talking about him and Violet. Is it that he's
And
giving her, is he giving her money? Implying that maybe George is the one who's financing Violet.
this is all why Violet knows that she has to move to another place to get a fresh start.
Right.
Because how is she going to get a job if there's always that question of where she's getting her lifestyle?
Right. That's very good. I completely agree with you on that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this minute?
Not particularly. I do love that there's just animals around Billy seemingly at all times, and the people around him don't even really react to it anymore. That's just Uncle Billy.
That's right. That's right. We'll get more into that later this week. We're going to see even more animals. Up until now, we've just seen
Exactly. I'm
crows.
very excited.
Yes.
Yes.
Or we've seen a crow. I mean, we talked about this a few months ago, but Jimmy the Crow apparently was in over hundreds of movies, over 1,000 movies or something like that. Some crazy amount.
Oh, well.
Yeah. He was known as a,
Superstar.
that's right, a superstar crow. All right, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Inspirational Story Edition, where my guests will give some sort of story, adventure, misadventure. Something's happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow was an inspiration to them. So, Leandro, do you have a story for us?
I do, and it's even related to It's a Wonderful Life.
Ooh.
I was in a community theater production of It's a Wonderful Life several years ago, and when I auditioned, I thought that I gave like very strong read for Violet or a couple of characters. And when the director called, she said, "We loved you. We thought you were great. We want you to be one of the bad guys." And I was like, "One of? I don't remember this." And she's like, "Yeah, we want you to be Potter's secretary. She is just absolutely bad news, but we think you're going to be great with it." So I was like, "Oh, this is going to be great." I got to the first read, and my one line was, "Mr. Potter will see you now." And I was just completely dejected and just like, this is not what I expected.
Yeah,
But
seriously.
when we got Yeah, it was like bad guy. I don't think so. I could be replaced with a sound cue. So we got to opening night and I was late to call. And by the time I got signed in, I found out that the director was looking for me and I thought that she was going to give me grief for being late. Instead, she said, "The bank examiner has called out sick and we wanted to know if you wanted to jump in for that role." And in the course of like maybe 15 to 20 minutes, I went with all of the actors that the bank examiner has to interact with and just walked through all of the scenes, and everybody was just incredibly supportive, and it ended up being one of the most fantastic kind of weekends for just everybody. As soon as I would get off the stage, they'd be like, "Oh, you did such a great job. All right, so the next thing, you got to do this." And even by the next day, I had all of my lines memorized. And because of that, like that entire production just kind of has a nice spot in my heart because it was one that I had initially kind of felt crummy about, but it gave me the opportunity to jump in and play a much larger role than I anticipated.
Wow, that's really cool. But who played the secretary?
It was, I asked one of the other extras. She was just a town folk, so she didn't even have lines. And I was like, do you want to say Mr. Potter will see you now? And she said, oh, more than anything. And she was just so happy.
You
So it
see, you
was
get to make
just
someone else happy at the
everybody.
same time too.
Exactly. It really was just the best for everybody. So except of course the bank examiner who was sick, but she ended up feeling better by the second weekend. So everything was back to normal by then, but still doesn't take away that it was a fun little journey that everybody went
Oh,
through.
wow. Very cool. All right, thank you. Thank you very much for that story. And I love the fact that it's related to It's a Wonderful Life. So, yeah,
Exactly.
works really well. Would you like to once again tell people where they can find Leandra Lynn?
For sure. You can go to RockyHorrorMinute.com or you can look up Rocky Horror Minute any place you get your podcasts.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot
I
dog.
love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.